Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, November 6th at 10:22 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like this week, Tim Ryan will announce whether or not he will run for governor.
Well, we're waiting.
Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who just can't let voters decide. They have to tilt the field of play to their advantage. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, The Columbus Way leads to our Snollygoster of the Week. But first, for those of us tired about talking about redistricting, we are happy. The issue appears settled for 6 years. But we might be the only ones who are happy. Hardline Democrats are not happy. Hardline Republicans are not happy. Congressman Greg Landsman of Cincinnati is not happy. Now former congressional candidate Kevin Coughlin of Northeast Ohio is not happy. They are not happy, but they have to live with Ohio's new congressional map. The Ohio Redistricting Commission has approved a bipartisan map. The map carves up Ohio into its 15 districts. Three are considered safe Democratic districts, and now 12 are considered to favor Republicans. That changes from the current map, which is 10-5 in favor of Republicans. The key changes. Democrat Emilia Sykes' district in Akron is more safely Democratic. Democrat Marcy Kaptur's district in Northwest Ohio in the Toledo area is more Republican than it even was. And Democrat Greg Landsman's district in Cincinnati goes from a toss-up district to one that definitely leans Republican. For more on how the commission reached this compromise and where Ohio goes from here, we turn to a panel of State House insiders. USA Today Ohio Network State House reporter Jesse Balmert, Republican strategist Mark Weaver, and Democratic strategist Stanley Gates. Jesse Balmert, in the end, what prompted this bipartisan agreement?
Yeah, there are a few different factors. Democrats knew that if this moved to November, that they were going to have no say in what this map looked like, and likely it would have led to 13 Republican districts, 2 Democratic districts. And then on the other side, Republicans were, you know, at least a little bit concerned about the possibility of this going to a ballot vote or a lawsuit, something that would be expensive, that would leave these districts up in the air for several months with candidates not knowing where they were going to run. So both sides got something.
So were they, with members of the commission, happy when it was over? What happened after the meeting was over? Were they celebrating, shaking hands, high-fiving, or just like, okay, this is best we can do?
State Representative Brian Stewart said that this was evidence that the process worked, that this is what voters wanted when they approved the 2018 ballot measure. Meanwhile, Democrats said that this is a broken process that would be better served by citizens being the ones to draw the maps, but they did what they felt like was the best of a bad option.
Half a loaf is better than none. Did Democrats get a half a loaf here or less?
I think they got half a loaf, but at the end of the day, you know, I think this is the best compromise that they could be able to come up with. I mean, Ohioans deserve better at the end of the day, but I do give credit to the Democrats for being able to come up with some compromise. This gives them a fighting chance to be competitive in their districts while also still being able to keep that 5 congressional seats. I think it might be a long shot, but at the same time, I do think it's much better than what was going to be proposed by the Republicans as well.
Mark, I think there were dreams from the ultra-conservative Trump supporters that it would be get down to Ohio 2 Democratic districts. They're disappointed with this map, that the Republicans didn't go harder for it.
It would be such good government if we could get to that. I think 12 loaves are better than 10. Right now, the Republicans hold 10 seats. They're likely to hold 12. Depending on the kind of year that Donald Trump has between now and the election, if his popularity stays roughly where the same it is, he has a very high floor and a very low ceiling. If he remains popular, it could go to 13. These maps could show 13 Republican members of Congress going to Congress next session.
But the Democrats see this as Landsman's district in Cincinnati, the Democrat, also Marcy Kaptur in Toledo. They're incumbents. They're in Republican-leaning districts. They think they could, in a, perhaps in a wave year, they could win, right, Jesse?
Yeah, Marcy Kaptur, after this map came out, said that she was going to run for re-election. That district is much more Republican than it has been. It has been leaning that way. She was able to win that district when it voted for Trump by nearly 7 percentage points. So she has some popularity in the district, but that is just going to be very hard for her to win. And then Greg Landsman right now has a couple of opponents. It'll be interesting whether this will draw another Republican or a more competitive Republican to run in that district.
If it's one thing we do know, too, about Congresswoman Kaptur, is that she's a fighter. She has definitely been up against odds similar to this. I do think it will be another challenge. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, the Democrats are just asking for the rules to be played in the way that voters asked it to be played in 2018 when they made the vote to do this.
Mark, the 15th district, which is Mike Carey's district, stretches from Grandview Heights to Miami County at far western Ohio. You know, far western Ohio and Grandview Heights don't have a whole lot in common. Is this a sign that the system still is broken?
The system has always been maps drawn for odd reasons, almost always political. The notion somehow that's a recent thing or that's an Ohio thing is just not correct. Gerrymandering is named after Elbridge Gerry, who was one of the, it was a generation of the founding fathers. Yeah. And so the notion of parties jostling to help themselves is part of the political process. The solution is, if you don't like the current members of Congress or the current members of the legislature, vote them out.
But it's hard to do when the districts are drawn to favor one party over the other. So I know everyone does it, and they've been doing it for 240 years. Does that make it right? I mean, should there be a better system?
Well, our system is such that both sides tussle, and then the side that wins gets to draw the lines. And the voters, in this case, not only do they get to pick members of Congress, they get to pick 99 reps and 33 senators, and those districts are a lot smaller. And so it's possible to defeat a Republican in a Democrat district and vice versa.
So, Stanley, what do Democrats need to do to fix this? Because that's Republicans got control in 2010, and that's where we are now for the most part. But Democrats could win seats before 2030 and move this the other way.
I think that's going to be the key. Democrats are going to have to show up, and they're going to have to make the votes to be able to do the change. It's going to suck, but again, it could be much worse. And so I think, you know, at this point, we have to make sure that we show up and play the game as much as they are playing the game too. Hopefully we see that. I think that there's definitely a chance for a wave, but I think it's going to take some time too.
Jesse, what's next? Is this over now? Is there any chance of lawsuits? There are a lot of folks at both hearings who are upset at both parties for this agreement.
I would say there's always a chance of lawsuits in any situation, but we did hear from Eric Holder, whose group has sued in the past, and he said that this is a gerrymander of a gerrymander, but was okay effectively with what came out of this. So that's at least one prominent group who might not be filing a lawsuit.
Once you have both parties on board and the Ohio Supreme Court looks different than it did last year, there was a couple of Subarus full of people in T-shirts at the hearings, you know, complaining this is the hard left type with nothing else to do. There's no lawsuit to be had.
What is this it now? Is this, Stanley, is this issue over? These maps are in place now until 2031 when we do the census again, like as normal. Are we done?
I think that this is going to be it. Until we get closer to 2030, I don't think we'll see a lot of action on this front. I think that Democrats will take this as a win in some cases, but also we know that there's a lot of folks who are also upset about it. But at the same time, you know, it could be much worse. And I think that Democrats will walk away saying that they won something rather than going into next month where, you know, the General Assembly could just force a map down their throats and you wouldn't be able to answer that at that point.
All right. So no repeal, no constitutional amendment like we had last year on the ballot. That's not in the cards right now. There's no talk of that, right, Jesse?
I don't think so. I mean, the 2024 amendment just happened, and I think people are reassessing where they're going from there.
The new map had an immediate impact on the race for Ohio's 13th congressional district, now occupied by Democrat Emilia Sykes of Akron. 2 years ago, she barely beat Republican Kevin Coughlin, and he was challenging her again. Many at the State House thought Republicans would draw a map that would give him a much better chance of beating her and help Republicans pick up another seat in their effort to keep control of the House. The Redistricting Commission did the opposite. It makes Sykes' district safer for the Democrat. So Coughlin immediately dropped out of the race, saying it would be hard for him to get national support and raise money. In a statement, he said, quote, "A small group of people have dealt a serious setback to keeping the Republican majority in the House." Now, last year, Coughlin opposed the redistricting amendment that would have created an independent redistricting commission. He said the amendment would have mandated gerrymandering instead of ending it. Well, that issue, of course, lost, and the gerrymandering continues, benefiting Democrat Emilia Sykes, and this time costing Kevin Coughlin a chance at Congress. We'll be right back.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Before we get to our Snollygoster of the Week award, some quick takes on this week's election. New Yorkers elected a Democratic socialist, Zohran Mamdani, as their next mayor. Republicans were quick to label him a radical socialist. But what won him that race was his laser focus on one issue. The cost of living in New York City is too high in voters' minds. A Democratic socialist is not going to win in Ohio, but Democrats could try to zero in on that tight economic message that Mamdani used to win the mayor's race in New York. Democratic candidates won governor's races in New Jersey and Virginia. Does that give Ohio Democrats hope? Perhaps. Republican Vivek Ramaswamy will be very hard to beat in a state that in recent years rarely elects a Democrat to statewide office. Ramaswamy has the Trump endorsement, and if Trump's popularity continues to fall, Ramaswamy may look wearily on Jack Cittarelli, the Republican with the Trump endorsement who lost to Mikey Sherrill by 13 points. And this week, in a social media video post, Ramaswamy seemed to get that for 2026, it will be the economy, stupid.
"We got our asses handed to us in New Jersey, Virginia, and New York City. Democrats swept all three. There's two key lessons for Republicans. Listen carefully. Number one, our side needs to focus on affordability. Make the American dream affordable. Bring down costs, electric costs, grocery costs, healthcare costs, and housing costs, and lay out how we're going to do it. And number two, cut out the identity politics. It doesn't suit Republicans. It's not for us. That's the woke left's game, not ours. We don't care about the color of your skin or your religion. We care about the content of your character. That's who we are."
Democrat Amy Acton or Democrat Tim Ryan still will have a lot of work to do to make up for Ohio's built-in Republican advantage. But, you know, Sherrod Brown has to be encouraged, and Senator John Husted has to be worried by the results in New Jersey and Virginia. But there is a long way to go before voters cast ballots next year. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. This week, we stick close to our home base of Columbus. Columbus City Council and mayoral elections are rarely competitive. But this year, there was one. Under a relatively new system, Columbus City Council members have to represent districts. And the race for the district in the southern western part of the city was very heated. It featured Tierra Ross and Jesse Vogel. Ross was the insider, handpicked by the Democratic establishment and the recipient of the Democratic Party endorsement. Vogel was the outsider. If you look at the results, Vogel easily won the votes cast in the district by a 60-40 margin. But he lost because even though candidates must live in the districts, they have to win votes citywide to get elected. It is a strange system that critics say is designed to make it hard for outsiders to win seats on city council. And this year, it did just that, because Vogel narrowly lost to Ross citywide, 51% to 49%. The Columbus way, it prevailed again. So, for shrewdly putting its thumb on the scale and giving a built-in advantage to their chosen candidate, the Columbus Democratic Party establishment gets our Snolligoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snolligoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. Just tell your friends about us. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snolligoster from WOSU Public Media.